Welcome back, everybody. We are officially in season two.
Yay.
So proud of how far we've come, and so happy to have everyone still here listening to us continuously all the time, right? So make sure that we subscribe and we follow on our IG page, which is Healing All Year Podcast, and subscribe to the podcasts wherever you listen to us. Okay, cool, wonderful. So for today's episode, we're talking about healing through grief. The world has gone through so much over these last recent months, but most importantly, we are still expected to continue living and moving as if it hasn't. With the countless murders from cops, the effects of COVID and quarantining, and our way of life, we have so many things to grieve over. So today, as you can see, or hear soon, we have some special guests to assist us in facilitating this conversation. Healing All Year would like to introduce Angela and Heather. Yay. Yay. So thank you, ladies, for coming. Appreciate it so much. Would you guys like to tell a little bit about yourselves? Let the audience know who you are, what you do. Anybody can start.
Oh, Heather.
So my name's Heather. Heather Lawrence. I am born and raised in Brooklyn, and I am many things. But I think what I'd like to talk about here is that I'm an educator, and I have a history as a public school teacher and an administrator. I've also developed some skills as a coach, both a leadership coach and a personal development coach and a yoga instructor. And I am really, really committed to curating experiences that support people in experiencing themselves and their world as extraordinary.
Thank you. Angela?
Angela Renee, and I'm a therapist by trade, and so I'm sharing that here that as we are speaking. But I consider myself a healer as a therapist, and I think the things that I bring to my relationships with my clients or participants is this sense of healing. And that's who I am. I believe in creating spaces where people feel fully themselves, where they can express themselves. I believe in holding space for grief and for mourning. And I like being that space for people, and it brings me satisfaction and a joy in some way.
Well, this is why we have you on the show, right? Because healing, and that's what we're all about, right? Okay, so thank you, ladies, so much for coming on the show and sharing yourselves with our listeners. So we're going to get right into it. How are you guys feeling today within your healing?
I think I would say that I'm open and I'm stretching and I'm hopeful, and I put in the hope part because I want to talk about walking in the unknown without it being a scary place. And so walking in the unknown with curiosity and some groundedness. And so I think the best word I have for that is hope. I think, given the topic, I've had, moments even in as recent as last week where I was present to someone's absence and present to transitions in my life in a way that, that I handled really differently than I have in the past. So yeah, open and hopeful.
I'm good with those words, open and hopeful. Angela?
Yeah, as I was thinking about what we would be talking about, always what comes to mind is my mom when I think about, grief and, how I feel about mourning or anything, that's what comes to mind. And I think what I always say to people is it gets different every year. You know, it's 20 years, it's 30 years, it's 5 years, 1 year. You know, people say it gets better. I think it gets different. And I attended a virtual wedding for my niece, and my father talked about my mom, and I just felt like, wow, you know, those feelings came back about missing her, and also feeling for him, like seeing the grief and seeing the mourning or the loss, and when he was talking about how, you know, my mom was not going to be there, and that he knows that she's watching her, and how proud he was. And you know, in that moment, what came to me is my niece has so many of my mom's qualities. Mm-hmm. And that just, like, popped out as soon as she said it. And, you know, like I said, just being in a different way in the process, I think, for me to heal.
Yeah, that's good. So what do you ladies think healing all year means to you?
I think what I talked about before is that it's a process, mm-hmm. and that, you know, it gets different depending on the day, the event, the person, you know, how you're feeling on a particular day. But it is a process that is, you have to be active in helping yourself heal.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you can just kind of sit back, but I think it takes you being in it in order to heal.
In the words of a very wise therapist that I have, she would often tell me to get messy. It's very messy. Yes. And I would very push back on being messy. But yes.
Yeah.
Heather.
I agree that it's about being active. And for me, the part of the action looks like being present. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, noticing things. Some of the action looks like rest, so you have the space to pay attention. And I think, like, really, like, literally paying attention, like, noticing what's going on with you and in your environment and how it connects to how you're feeling on a consistent basis. Like, and I don't think that healing is just about noticing, you know, what's not going well. I actually think it's also about really noticing, like, how things are going differently, you know, where there's been growth. I mean, I think healing, it's also like a celebration. And in that sense, it's cyclical. Mm. You know, like, you can have a moment that is intense, positive and negative, and be present to all of the ways that you handle it differently and all of the people you're willing to handle it with. Mm. Right? Because I think that's another part of the journey. I was socialized that you manage things, particularly intense negative emotions, by mm-hmm. yourself. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when I think about my experience with healing and the journey that I'm on in relation to healing, it's also like being willing to let people in, to receive support, to receive love, you know, in all the ways that it comes.
Yeah.
It doesn't always come in the way you can control.
Or the way that you imagine it or envision it. Right? Like, there's
absolutely
there's that part of it too, right? Wow. So yeah. So we have a good aspect of our relationship with healing all year. Yeah. I think everything you said is really important. So for the listeners who are going through this, so this episode should premiere hopefully after the pandemic's over, right? But we're recording it during the pandemic. But there's a lot of things that we've had to grieve during these times because of the pandemic, but just in general, like with anything that goes on in life, right? So what would we say grief is?
I didn't have words for it. I was struggling, and I had a headache and you know, and then I found someone else's words because I didn't have any of my own, and Maria Shriver, who I'm pretty sure is JFK's daughter. She wrote, "It's the opening up to the exquisite pain of absence. It's a moment when you stop trying to move on or change how much it hurts and just let it out." Ooh. And I thought, that works for me. And that works for me when it's not even about a person. Sometimes it's about things or a time or a place. And I think I'm recently becoming present to this experience of grief being about like times in life, about, you know, work, about ways my body used to work, mm-hmm. that it might not work in the same way anymore.
Right.
And I had a moment, you know, this year around my birthday where I just got really clear about how much it hurts to experience certain changes. And I think it's only because I chose to be with it that I don't have the same like sadness or heaviness.
Same conversation you would have had last year around your birthday. It's a different conversation this year.
Absolutely, completely different conversation. Yeah,
yeah. And for those of you out in podcast land, we'll talk a lot about our conversations with things, because although we can talk to each other about these things, but it's ultimately our conversations with ourselves around mm-hmm. this idea of grief and around this idea. I know for me personally that grief is non-existent and it handles itself over there in the corner, and you don't look at it, you don't touch it, you just ignore it. But I personally know that doesn't work. So, right, that doesn't work. But for me, like recently, like grief has been a little bit of the old portions of what I identified with grief being, where it's like you leave it in the corner, and also understanding that my body is reacting to it in ways that I didn't necessarily pay attention to. So I'm like what Heather was saying about being present. So I'm being a little bit more present, not 100% more present. I'm going to say maybe 75% more present as to the grief that happens in my body, and realizing that my body reacts, and I'm just like, wait, why am I sad? Why am I crying? What is going on that I'm having these reactions? And then I'm like, but nothing's happening. Like nothing's going on. And then I have to really sit and be like, okay, you're kind of lying to yourself. There's a lot of stuff happening, right? And you know, as I've told my clients before, like you may not be feeling it, and you may be like, you know, you're home, you're relaxing or whatever. And it's like the outside world is also affecting you, right? So we'll talk a little bit more about that after. But for those of us who, and Angela, I'm sorry, did you want to?
Yeah, so for me, grief is the response to a loss. And I think a lot of times people talk about grief as it relates to death, or, mm-hmm. you know, we don't talk about grief as it relates to a miscarriage, or, you know, we don't talk about grief as it relates to, as Heather said, the loss of function. Mm-hmm. And it is a loss. And those losses, I believe, need to be recognized. And the other thing that you talked about is, our body remembers. Like I used to, you know, my mom died in October. In September, I would be feeling like all of these feelings and wondering what is going on. My body remembered that during this time, it was sort of like a prep time before October, and that, you know, that this grief would be coming up for October. And I think that we have to key into those things so that we're recognizing that our body is saying something to us, and we need to be responsive to it.
Yeah.
And so that's what came to mind to me when you talked about that.
You know, that transitions perfectly into our like next question of like, what does grief do to your body? I know in from last season, I know I spoke about the body keeps a score. I'll link it so people can, you know, read it. And I do understand that our body remembers. We may not remember, but our body's like, wait, I remember that time.
Right.
Does anybody want to share upon that?
Also, our body remembers that we respond to grief in a certain way that we can not get past it, but heal from it. right? So it remembers that too. It doesn't just keep the negative score. It also keeps the positive score. And I think that we have to be thinking about that as well, because sometimes grief can just like overcome us and yes. we feel like we can't cope or we can't function. But if we tap into that, our body remembers that we were able to cope and function and that we healed, then we can remember those things when we're having those feelings.
So what I'm hearing you say is celebrate more of the trajectory that we've come, the journey that we've come, so we can like remember what, where we've been, but also what we've gained.
Yeah.
That's what I heard.
I think, I know that, you know, I think everybody has an individual process of grief. I think it looks different on everybody. And I lost my father in October. And I'm really clear that some of the things that start to happen for me is like I will randomly be forgetting things and details. Mm. I'll alternate between like being furious about something and then like completely despondent. And what I am recognizing about, you know, the despondence, like the sad time, or, you know, I could go as far as labeling it the depression times, is that like I slow down enough to be with the things that are triggering me. And then inevitably I remember, oh, it's October. Mm. But I'm also clear, like when those things happen at other times, that I'm in the same place. So I feel like being able to recognize the pattern when it comes to grieving the loss of my father, which happened in October, has also supported me in being present to like how I'm managing transitions or other losses or things that I'm experiencing as loss, which might not be connected to a death, right? So like I'm randomly forgetting things and I'm, you know, flipping between anger and sadness. Oh, wait, well, what's that? So then I get curious.
Right.
And sit with me long enough, whether it's in a meditation or in a conversation over brunch with somebody, to really start to surface what's happening. But I think the other thing that I've noticed physically is like sometimes I get like a shoulder issue. Mm-hmm. Like I physically get a knot in my shoulder that I can't manage. And then if it's really too much, like my hip will bother me, but only on the right side of my body. And I'm just like, I think I only started to pay attention to that after I started to be a yoga instructor and just noticing those things more. But I say all of that to say that like there are physical and there are emotional experiences that come with loss, that come with transitions. And I feel like we exist in a culture that would have us say, enough, you know, like there was a time for this and that time is over.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I'm experiencing, just like Angela said in the beginning, that time is different. It's not over. It's different. And so some things become more precious in the difference, and some things, you know, as intense.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Angela, did you want to chime in?
Yeah, I think
Heather said it all. Yes. Also with that, Heather, I think it also transitions into like the different stages, right? Because you mentioned about like feeling anger, and it's not that your father or Angela, your mom, passed away like within this year, right? Like there's been years in between that, but I do understand that we go through these griefs, we go through the grief stages all together in different order, in different time. Could you share a little bit more about the stages, Angela?
Sure. It's exactly what you said. You know, it's named as the seven, but it's not like you go through all seven in one, and then you're going to go to two, then you're three, then you're four. You could be at five, you could be at seven, you could be at one, you could be at acceptance, you could be in denial, you could be bargaining at different intervals when you are experiencing grief. And again, I just wanted to point out that, you know, a lot of times we talk about it related to death, but grief is also related to other things. Like, you know, what's going on right now in the pandemic?
Yeah.
People are depressed, you know, and people are angry, and people are, you know, there are some people that are feeling guilty about what has happened,
or,
you know, maybe their loved ones have passed away and, you know, they're feeling guilty about, should I have taken them to the hospital or not?
Yeah.
And so I think, and a lot of shock and disbelief.
Yeah.
Definitely a lot of shock and disbelief. And on any given day, you can go through all of those emotions related to grief. And what Heather was talking about is like tuning in to what's going on with Angela. What is Angela feeling right now?
Right.
Is important. And you know, for everyone to kind of recognize that when it comes to grief.
Yeah, it's like sitting with oneself.
Right.
I know oftentimes within our communities, we don't want to sit with ourselves, because I know for me growing up, like, I have this bad habit at times, and I know where I get it from. I want to be busy. And I know within the pandemic, like, pandemic has forced me to sit with a lot of the stuff that I'm just like, whoa, this is still here? Like, okay. I'm not saying that I'm fully dealing with it, right? I'm going to whisper that. But I'm clear that there's still stuff there. Like, there's still things that are lingering. But there's also still things that I'm just like, okay. Like, I think I've gotten through this. Like, I know for me, when the pandemic first started, I was severely depressed. Like, severely depressed. And then I was graduating and going through that transition, and it was a lot of like mourning. And then one day I'm just like, okay, I think I feel better. And I think now, since we've been in this space for so long and our way of life has changed, I think for me, I'm not necessarily grieving what I had, but I'm more so like, this is the new normal. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stay in my little bubble. And I don't know if that's part of grief, but when you guys were talking about it, I'm just like, well, I'm not really like extending myself anymore as I used to. I'm not really like interacting as much as I used to. So that could, I felt like that could be also a part of avoidance. You know, it's one of those words that I.
Well, is it avoidance? Like, I'm curious because I think you do know. Is it avoidance?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, great. So let's just be with that. Like,
I think it is avoidance. I think it is.
Okay, congratulations.
The thing that also came to me is like being comfortable in discomfort.
Yes.
Is that okay? I know my listeners are rolling their eyes at this moment, Angela, because being comfortable with being uncomfortable, what does that even mean? Like,
well, it means like what's going on with you right now. What you're talking about is in avoidance in order to be able to sit with all the feelings that are going on. A lot of times when we feel uncomfortable, we want to do something about it. We want to run. We want to drink. We want to shop. We want to smoke, whatever it is, because we don't feel comfortable in that place. And what's called for now is for us to be uncomfortable, and then okay, this is uncomfortable, but be okay with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because on the other side of that is healing.
Mm.
And that's what we want, right?
Right.
We want healing.
Right.
We want the sunshine.
We want the sunshine.
But we have to go through some things in order to get to the place of healing.
Yeah. Yeah. So for everybody out there, like, don't roll your eyes. There's a light on the other side. The grass is a little bit greener on the other side. So there's still some room for us to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it with plants, right? Like, if you have a plant and you notice that it's not thriving, like, oh, leaves are falling off or leaves are turning yellow. Like, it is not every plant owner's nature to be like, nah, I'm going to just let it do what it do and die. Like, you get curious about it. You change the circumstances. You might offer it some water. You might do some research. You might talk to a friend. And it, you know, it's just interesting to me that what we would do for a plant or for a pet, we don't think to do for ourselves mm-hmm. and our emotional life. Like, you know, like, I know that I've learned. I didn't always know this, right? But I've learned that, like, if I'm feeling funky, like, someone else has noticed that I'm feeling funky. And so, you know, if maybe I'm not present to it, but I could say to them, you notice that I'm a little off? Like, when did I start being off? And you collect the kind of information that allows you to nurture yourself.
Yeah.
But, like, unless somebody, you know, see one is like, hey, you could take care of you too. It's not, at least for me, it wasn't natural. Let me own that.
That's I mean, I'll take a little nibble of that too, you know.
Great.
which is really ironic. So when we first started the show, Angela mentioned, like, it's so ironic that you have us both on the show. So Angela and Heather are really close to me, and I hold them dear to my heart in their own individual ways. And in the avoidance conversation, I like to be really vulnerable with my listeners. I've avoided grief conversations over grief for, I don't know, years. I don't know, like, I don't know, 15 plus years. I don't know. I just don't talk about it. We just don't deal with it. It's not there. And I think, after the passing of my niece, I think I have more conversation around, okay, well, this isn't working anymore, so, like, what's up, right? But I also know I'm uncomfortable with the conversations around grief, around people's mournings, around people experiencing that sadness. Like, I know that I'm just like, I need you to get away from me. I need you to deal with it, but not come to me for it all the time, right? Because I don't know the words. I don't have the capacity at times to hold space for all of the emotions that come with it on my end, not on the person's end, on my end. Like, I don't know where to hold mine and yours, and I feel like if I hold both, something's gonna fall, and it's gonna be me, and I, right? So the messy conversation, I don't want to be messy. I don't
want to
be messy.
So is that still real, though?
Oh, that's very.
I was just thinking that.
Very present and very real.
Thinking that, Heather.
Very present and very real. Very.
I'm not sure I agree with you. Oh. I mean, you can. It's your story.
No,
but
yeah.
As an outsider, right? I have watched you make the choice. I have actually listened to you on the phone while I was walking around the Bloomingdale's. Right, like. Be present to the choice, and you were around others who were experiencing similar things. So I would like to acknowledge, as someone who's not in your head, that you have taken ground on this. And maybe you tell the story so that you don't have to push faster or farther than you want. But I'm also present to every inch that you take. There's like hundreds of people who are served by your willingness to do so, and guess what? You're still here.
Yes, I'm not broken, and no. Nobody else out here who is also experiencing some of the things that I've talked about, it's not broken. I truly hate that word, and I've only used it for like one in particular person, and one of my listeners will know who this person is. That's about it. I don't like using the word broken, because I just feel like people aren't broken.
Neither are you.
Right.
And you get to upgrade that story like you would upgrade a phone.
Yes.
You see why, like, I picked these two? Yes. Ooh. This is why. The accountability is real, right? And I think within this conversation, like, we still need our support systems to check in on us, ask us, like, are you okay? And okay. Not like, hey, how are you? You good? Okay, I'm good too. No, but actually be like, okay, let's pause. What's going on? Like, not even how are you doing, but like, have you eaten today? Have you taken a shower? Have you gone outside? Like, the level of being able to go outside and just experience the sun, experience the air, experience all these things that allow us to realize, like, we're still here, although our circumstances are, although whatever it is that we're grieving isn't here or is changed, like there's still life within us to continue either changing it, either dealing with it, either experiencing something different in lieu of that, right? So how can we like cope with the grief or like with the things that we thought that were on this trajectory, on this path, and now things are totally different? Like we feel like the train has derailed and we don't know where to go. How do we cope?
I think, you know, what we talked about, sitting with yourself and your feelings, that's very crucial and critical. Meditation is helpful. Yoga, as Heather mentioned, journaling. A lot of times people use journaling, you know, writing my day. I hated it and I hate my mom and I hate my dad. When I'm talking about journaling, I like to use it for gratitude. I like to use it for writing down my intentions. I use it for thanking myself for things that I accomplish, little small things. Like if I walk in the mornings for 4 miles, I thank myself for doing that, for giving that to my body. So I like to use journals in different ways. I think it's important to write out your feelings. And I think it's also good to have another journal where you're expressing some gratitude and you're expressing some light for yourself. I think that those are ways of coping. But not moving too fast to those things. Like sitting with this doesn't feel good.
No, it doesn't.
I think is important.
It doesn't.
This, I feel sad. I don't feel like moving right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then recognizing, where is it coming from? As you said, you know, the body keeps score. What is my body responding to? Do mm-hmm. I feel it in my stomach? Do I feel it in mm-hmm. my head? Touching those things and talking to your stomach and talking to your head and saying, I hear you. You're trying to tell me something. What are you trying to tell me? And really tapping into those things, I think, are important, because we could give like all of these coping yeah. skills and say you could do this,
yeah.
and you can do that,
yeah,
and we can rush to do those things,
right?
And then our body is still going to be like, my stomach is upset and I'm going to the bathroom and I don't know why, because we're just trying to rush through the process of grief.
Yeah, I would only add, like, because that's a phenomenal list, like really just paying attention to your breath.
Yes.
You know, Is it shallow? Is it fast? You know, if you only breathe through your nose, can you slow it down? Will you take a deeper breath? You know, how does it feel to take a deeper breath?
Yeah.
Because I think that before I can reach to cope, like I really just have to be with you, what is going on and what can I count on?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, like, I can count on my breath. I can appreciate my breath. I can be grateful for my breath. You know, I can do things as simple as, okay, like, I am seated, in this case, on the floor, right?
Yeah.
There is a fan blowing at me. I have to get really, like, grounded
yeah.
in right now so that I can make those choices about which one of those amazing tools is useful to me.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful that I learned, like, that I was taught to pay attention to my breath, but like anybody can do it because everybody has it.
Right.
And yeah, so that's the only thing I would add, because, you know, Angela's quite thorough.
No, I think, you know, Angela, like, thank you for pointing that out, because it's important for us not to rush. It's important for us not to rush this process, because the process, as much as we rush into it, the process ain't going away. It could be years down the line and we're still in the whole denial stage, or we're still in the anger stage. And, you know, and then those things show up differently in our bodies that we mentioned earlier, like a hip hurting, or I know some people have like thyroid issues, or, you know, like anxiousness and hurt and unhealed traumas, I'm going to say, show up in our bodies. And we categorize them as like, oh, like I'm just gonna go to the doctor, I have a really bad headache, doctor's gonna give me some pills. But in reality, like, it doesn't solve the root of the issue. I had a professor tell me, like, if you're gonna talk to your clients, yeah, having like these fix it all things may help, but what's the root of the issue? What's the root of their problem, or where is that stuff coming from? And that's what you attack, not like the band-aids. So that's what I'm hearing you guys say. It's like, no band-aids. straight to like peroxide on that on the cut. That's what I heard. Just straight alcohol. Just I'm joking. Not that. That's what I heard. So you know, during like the research that I was doing for this episode, I found like Brené Brown. I know some of us know her and her wonderful work on vulnerability, because my listeners know how I feel about being vulnerable. We're working towards it, right? We're working towards it day by day.
It's a practice.
It's not a practice. It's a lifestyle. Like, it's like once you get it, you're never going to get rid of it. And once you open yourself up, that's it. We're here. We're vulnerable. Right? That's what it is.
You use the word get rid of it. I really appreciate that you use the words get rid of it. You know, like you're talking about it like it's gum on your shoe.
I'm just, you know, you just,
and,
you can't.
And, you know, consider that it's like, what if it's a key?
Right. So it says a lifestyle. It's the key to the best life that you could ever have. Because being vulnerable allows so many doors to be opened and so many possibilities. I know. Anyways, but so Brené Brown says that healing requires us to live courageously and allow ourselves to fully experience the feelings of loss and grief. So when I first heard this, you know, I rolled my eyes, right? You know, I did. However, in the context of the podcast, in the context of what we're talking about, like, we literally can't live courageously and fully experience anything and loss and grief, right? So why do we think some people just don't agree with this? Like, don't feel like living courageously, one, is in itself, but like fully experiencing and embracing the loss, embracing the grief. And this could be with, you know, a loved one, it could be within whatever, right? So I don't want people to think that we're only talking about death, right? Because that's not the only thing that we grieve in our lives. We can literally grieve everything, right? So why do we think there's some people, not myself, some people who avoid it, some people who run from it? Like, why do we think that?
I don't think we're raised to be with pain. Not even, like, even when you see little kids fall, you know, like parent X or Y will rush to make sure that the injury isn't experienced as, you know, damage or trauma. And so there's a lot of years of learning that pain is bad, when actually, like, pain's information. Sometimes that information means stop, and sometimes that information means that something else is happening, shift.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one part of it. In my own experience with avoiding grief or avoiding emotional pain, I wasn't sure who I was going to be on the other side of it.
Ooh.
And so that uncertainty was what I was avoiding. Or if I chose to interact with it, like, am I going to be a mess?
Mm.
And, you know, my own story is like, I don't have time for mess.
Don't have time for it.
I'm a black woman in America. Mess? No. Right? Yes. So, like, my story is about the role of perfection in how I function as a professional in the world made it really difficult for me to choose grief. And oddly enough, it wasn't until I had an intense professional loss that I actually stepped into grief. And stepped into grief as an experience, right, that would allow me to believe it or not, like, learn myself.
Mm.
It was not fun.
Of course not.
It was not fun. And on the other side of it, I'm equipped to make very different decisions about what supports me personally, very different decisions about what I want personally, like in relationships and in a job. Like, I actually got a lot of information that helps me thrive.
Right.
Now, I don't know that I don't know that that always happens, but I know that the choice to get to, you said this earlier, to get to the root of those feelings, like, have been invaluable in some of the career shifts that I've made. Mm-hmm. Because being more present to me also allows me to be more present to everyone.
Right.
And I didn't know that before. I didn't realize that I was compromising some personal relationships because I was not choosing a relationship with me, especially where my intense emotions connected to pain or grief were. Mm.
Yeah. That's real. And it's like the... Yes, Heather. Yes.
I also think people avoid it because they're afraid.
Yeah.
And there's a fear that you won't be able to get yourself out of the grief, right? That you won't be able to get out of the bed, that you won't be able to move, that it will just debilitate you. And like Heather said, sometimes we don't have a model for that, right?
No.
We, you know, you go to a funeral or something and, you know, everybody's in their sunglasses. Mom's not, you know, someone dies, you don't see mom crying. So you get the message that you shouldn't cry when people die, you know. I think when you're younger, those are the messages that you get. Yeah. And, you know, if you lose one of your friends, it's not talked about, and I don't mean lost like death, but like when you move from a school and your parents don't talk to you about it, they're just like, get over it. You go into a new school, you make new friends.
Well, your friends aren't talking to you. Yeah.
The friends that you lost and the relationships that you had, and your feelings about losing those relationships. And sometimes we don't have that model. So it's scary when we don't have the model of what to do when we've experienced a loss.
Yeah. So how can we model for our children, for the future generations, in order for them to actually feel what we have worked so hard all these years to continue to feel? How can we model for them to start earlier?
I actually think kids are really good at feeling their feelings. I feel like adults educate them out of it. And so what I'm wondering is if part of the work is for adults to let kids have their feelings or be willing to talk to them about it.
Yeah.
Or talk them through it so that they have more words, maybe.
Yeah.
As a parent, sometimes things will happen and I want to rush to make it better, but I literally sit on my hands to like not say anything if my daughter is crying or she's upset. Because I want her to be able to, you know, sit with her feelings and express them to me and say that she's upset with me and say that she's feeling sad about something.
Yeah.
Without me rushing in to say, it'll be all right or you'll be okay or, you know, stop that crying.
Which,
that is not something to be crying about.
Triggered over here.
because I feel uncomfortable, I would like you to stop crying.
Yeah.
Not because you should set, you know, you should not feel your feelings, but sometimes that happens. So I think Heather is right also. Kids are really good at feeling their feelings.
Yeah.
You just try to help them out of it.
I can only laugh because I don't remember people telling me, my family telling me like you shouldn't cry. But more so, like, I'm the only girl. And it's like, well, we're not crying. So why are you crying? Like, why you get that authority to cry and we don't? Like, you know, childhood trauma is another topic. That's another day.
But I do, to your point, though, I do think that childhood informs whether or not we think it's okay to have our emotions. Like, yeah. I can't tell you how many times, and, you know, Angela makes a joke about it. Stop crying. I can't get something to cry for. Like,
yeah.
What? Like, you'll give me something to cry for. I already have something to cry for. What do you mean? And so, I remember... I was actually just thinking about like what were my models for grief, you know? And when my grandmother died, like we didn't really talk about it. We were there and we fulfilled our obligations to the community, but we didn't talk about it.
Right.
When my father died, like, I was in Jamaica and, you know, I was there with my stepmom, which I thought was going to be an opportunity for us. And literally for the 6 weeks we were there, she didn't speak to me. And if she looked at me, she would get teary and go get busy. Now, I happen to look a lot like my father, so I understand that my presence was triggering for her.
Now you understand that.
Yeah, I understand that now. Mm-hmm. And I also understand that it took her 6 years to acknowledge that her reaction to me was traumatic for me while we were, you know, managing that there. All of that to say that there really are so many messages that we're offering people about being with their emotions that would suggest it's not appropriate, mm-hmm. or that you are somehow supposed to find an appropriate time. So when you get socialized in that, like unlearning it, it can be both cathartic and like uncomfortable
and draining. Unlearning all the things that personally I was taught or viewed or seen or whatever is exhausting. And it's more exhausting to have the knowledge and have the words and try to just lend a suggestion. Like, I'm saying lend a suggestion. I don't always lend suggestions. I oftentimes be like, you want to do this better? Because this isn't working. But lending a suggestion is what I'm going to say. To just like, hey, maybe therapy might work. I put therapy on everybody, right? I think everybody needs therapy. But like, especially my family, like, maybe therapy might give you a different understanding. And they're always like, but you know the words, so why I need to go? I don't get paid for you. This is not ethical. Okay. I used to tell them all the time, it's not ethical for me to take you on. It's not. Somebody else can handle that. But it's just a lot of pressure. Like, there's a lot of like pressure on that aspect of it. So we're gonna embrace our vulnerability through the grief, right? And we have to.
Is that you lending a?
Huh?
That's a suggestion.
This is a good suggestion. Yes. Yes. I don't necessarily tell my listeners what to do. I just lend suggestions, however way they want to take the information. It's fine as long as we put it out into the world. We're doing our contributions. But embracing our vulnerability, I think is. I'm gonna say like the next step. We should add that on to, like, we should petition for them to add this to, like, the stages of grief. Like, really, like, embracing our vulnerability in it. Like, I don't even want to talk about this right now. We actually have to grieve. It's, like, impossible not to. But oftentimes we believe, I myself, that we don't have to. That we can just avoid it until it goes away, right? So how do we step into our vulnerability during this time? Anyone can answer.
Yeah, I think, so I what I appreciate about the question is that it suggests that we get to be in action, that we get to do something. And, you know, contrary to my upbringing and the majority of my life, like, I'm in this place where I think I would go back to we get to pay attention to what we need to receive.
That's still doing. Even if it's not, you know, actionable, like, we're out here doing something, like, not tangible, I don't want to say tangible because it's all tangible, like, things that we're using with our hands or things that we're using with our bodies, like, I think sitting, being present, is also action, but
I think so. What I'm reacting to is I'm reacting to the idea that it will happen because we said so, or that we allow it.
Okay.
And so, like, I know that intellectually I understood that vulnerability was something that would support me with many of the things I was struggling with, you know, as an adult in relationship to my work, in relationship to myself. And I think it wasn't until either I had sat still enough or I was in a conversation with someone I trusted enough that I understood, like, how it loomed for me. Mm-hmm. Like, it opened up as an answer. Like, I was in a conversation, I was vulnerable in a way that was unprecedented for me, and I left, and I was like, whew, well, I feel better.
Yeah.
And so there's a part of me that says, yes, we can invite people to consider vulnerability and cultivate the trust and the community that makes it more likely that it will happen.
Yes.
Right? Because at least for me, mm-hmm. I needed trust before vulnerability was available for me. And mm-hmm. and if I'm really real, like, I didn't have the trust in myself.
Ooh.
I experienced it in relationship to someone else.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. There goes that conversation. Angela, chime in.
What I was thinking about that I learned in a leadership training is that just because you share, it doesn't mean that you're being vulnerable. And so, and I went through a lot of my life, and, you know, my family is this way too. We share, but it doesn't mean that you're being vulnerable. And I think that also needs to be looked at. You know, sometimes we look at people saying, oh, they're not being vulnerable, they're not sharing. But then we have, and myself included as a recovering oversharer, that sometimes you're sharing, but you're not being vulnerable. And I think, you know, stepping into that is important as well.
Ooh, I just need to say something about that for a second, because I had strategic shares. Ooh, I'm the master of generating an intimate share where you knew nothing.
Ha, hello. Hi.
Girl.
You remember me?
Yo, I'm good at that. And I really, like, I mean it when I said, yo, it was hard to unlearn that.
Yeah.
Line, it was hard out here for a pimp. Yo, it was hard to unlearn the strategic share. Like, to really, to be in my feelings and have you see? What?
Wait, so that's what we're calling strategic sharing? Because
that's what it was.
During that leadership portion as well for myself. Okay, so listeners, because, right, we're still recording. We all participated in a leadership workshop. If you want to know, hit me up on the side, I'll let you know. But during that leadership workshop, everybody knew nothing about me, but felt like they knew everything about me. It was, and I could honestly say to myself, like, you were not being vulnerable. You shouldn't have gotten as far as you did during those times, but I'm good at people being like, I know Nelia, that's her. And when you really sit there and ask, they'd be like, all right, so what do you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just make you feel good, right? Like, I've made, in that time, I made them feel good, obviously. I'm learning more about that, so this is not where I'm at in this particular part of my life, but I do acknowledge when that comes up. But yeah, it comes up because I don't want to be vulnerable. I don't need you to know everything about me, which is why I oftentimes share a lot more on this podcast than maybe I should, but we just here. This is what we're doing, right? This is why the podcast started. This is why we're in season two. This is why we're doing what we're doing, because if I'm not vulnerable, the healing doesn't start with me. And if the healing doesn't start with me, then who am I healing? What are we doing? Like, what is the world doing if I'm not healing? So that's why I need to slogan.
I love that you
slogan.
I'm beginning to think that healing is a shared experience. It's not, it's like, so I'm healing, right? I am generating the process of healing in myself and in my life, and I'm sharing that as we talk. And it is because of that sharing, right, that other people get their own context for healing. Like, your job isn't to take mine on, but to have the experience, seeing what it creates, yes, and then choosing that for yourself.
Yeah.
And so I think we were having a conversation earlier about modeling. I think that it's very important. And so to be in a transparent conversation, an intimate conversation with an intimacy that starts with you, it's a beautiful thing. And along these lines of I'm telling them myself now. But on the along these lines of the strategic share, like I had an interaction with someone and they're like, everybody knows you, everybody, you know, loves you. And I said, you know, I think what I'm going to offer to you is that people mistake warmth for intimacy. And I'm very warm with people, but that's different from being intimate. And I don't know that everybody, even in their own life, is present to the distinction, because our society is so transactional. We're not always present to the depths.
Yeah. Angela? Is Angela frozen?
In this moment, she appears to be frozen.
So, listeners, we're also recording on Zoom because, you know, we're trying something new here. So Angela in this current moment is frozen. So, you know,
she looks so good.
She does. Yes, she's frozen. So there's also, you know, all these things that have to do with our grief. And this isn't a one way, one spot conversation. Because literally we only have 60 minutes to talk about this, right? This isn't a blueprint. This isn't a do it this way, you will feel better. No, it's literally finding your own way, literally finding the things that works for you, because there's only you, right? Like everybody who was on the podcast is able to say like, yeah, this works for me, this works for me, this doesn't, but literally it only matters how you can get through it and how you can figure out what some of the tips that, you know, we've given, especially with the sitting with yourself. And I think that's the asterisk, that the main objective in this moment is just really sitting with yourself and sitting with yourself and just really feeling it, and whatever comes up after that, understand that you have the capability to get through it, you have the knowledge to get through it, and you have the strength to get through it.
I think I definitely agree with you about having the knowledge that you'll get through it.
Yeah.
And you know, the word that I keep using so that I can remind myself to do it. 100% of the most difficult experiences you've had, which is evidence that you can trust that we'll get through the next one.
Yeah, trust. Trust is a huge, huge one. But Heather, Angela's right back on. Hey, Ange. I know you lost it. You lost it. I think it's cool. No worries. So basically we have trust, and this is where our relationship with grief goes with. Our healing through grief is trust within ourselves, that we know that it's going to end up on the other side. Do you guys want to leave your last remarks? We have like 2 more minutes. Parting.
What do you think, Angela? Well, thank you for having me on the podcast. This is super exciting.
Yeah.
This is my first podcast, so I was happy that you invited me to join. I think, you know, in parting, something that I've said throughout is that really sitting with what's going on with you and recognizing what your feelings are around grief, and also that it's okay to grieve, it's okay to have whatever feelings. Like you had mentioned that, you know, you're not grieving because you're avoiding. That is actually a part of grief, right?
Yeah.
So it is denial, avoidance, the same thing.
Yes.
So you know, sometimes you stay in different phases of grief, and that it's okay.
Yeah.
And try not to judge yourself.
Yeah.
Accept where you are in your process, and that healing is actually going to come with your openness and your willingness. And, you know, perhaps you could use some of the tools that we offer, but most important, being with yourself and being okay with yourself and saying, I'm okay with where I am.
Yes. I think that's a perfect way to end it. Thank you, Angela, for that. Thank you, Heather, as well, for sharing yourselves. And yeah, thank you guys so much, listeners. Thank you guys for sticking with us and sticking it out. Appreciate you. Let us know. Thanks. Bye.